Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'd love to have your questions for him during the next half an hour. Call those in to 765-496-1999. Email them to ask@wbaa.org and tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. We understand you're on the road today, so we're glad to catch you.
Yep, on the road, headed right now to our bird aviary, which we'll be having a ribbon-cutting ceremony at 1:30 today with our community foundation. So that will be exciting.
That was actually one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today, because we saw that that was happening, and it's one of a number of things you're doing there in TPA Park. And people might remember a couple of years ago, the animals there and even some of the birds were actually sold kind of under the nose of the city by the then parks superintendent, who was fired after that. At the time, there wasn't even any accounting of what animals the park had, and so it seems that it's fair to assume a lot has changed there in the last couple of years.
Absolutely. We've righted the ship, found some things, and when you find issues, you deal with them head on, you be transparent about it, and you fix it moving forward, and that's what we've done. Today, I hope that people can come out. The bird aviary will officially be open on Memorial Day, but this project's neat because we actually partnered with our community foundation. Our community foundation donated $45,000 in grant money, and we paired that with city funds to completely rebuild the aviary. One neat new component to the aviary is it's completely handicap accessible. We had a concrete walkway poured so someone that's wheelchair bound can actually come and go through the entire aviary just like everyone else. And then Frito Lay partnered with us, and they helped sponsor informational placards. So as you walk through the aviary and you're seeing all these beautiful birds from different parts of the globe, there's pictures of the bird, and it tells a little bit about them and what region of the globe they come from, with some neat information. So it's really an amenity that I hope will start attracting even more people to TPA Park. And our park superintendent, Travis Sheets, has done a great job in getting some different species. So it's much different even than it used to be. We have several macaws that when you come and you talk to them, they'll talk right back to you. So it's a neat asset for our park, and today we celebrate that.
On to some other things. Let's talk a little bit about this year's primary election. It was not as big a win for you as 4 years ago when you got 90% of the vote, although anytime that happens, that's always a little bit of an electoral outlier, but still a sizable win. You took about 3/4 of the vote this year. I talked with Lewis Wheeler, your challenger, within an hour after the results were released, and he called himself stunned by the margin of victory. I didn't ask you what your reaction was, though, to the numerals that came out that night.
Yeah, so I have to say, you know, from the beginning, and I told you this, I went into it with the mindset that we were 10 points behind Mr. Wheeler, and we just simply worked very, very, very hard. And you know, opposition kept stating our community's divided, our community's divided. Well, I think the vote showed our community is not divided. Taking 73% of the vote, we're very proud of that. Did I necessarily expect that? No, because I was going into it that I was the underdog. So I think the vote showed that our community has coalesced behind quality of place and amenities and job creation. And we were pleased with those numbers. It tells me that at least a great majority of the constituency feels as though Frankfort is headed in the right direction.
You know, there's an old saw in politics that you can tell a lot about who's going to win by looking at the number of yard signs that are present in a community. And I was thinking about that as I was driving through town on the night of the forum between you and Mr. Wheeler. And I don't think you had a 3-to-1 advantage in yard signs based on what I can tell. In fact, one of the interesting things I saw was that there were a number of yards that had both your sign and Mr. Wheeler's sign in them, which I don't know that I've seen too often. I wonder if you thought you had to get the vote out a little bit more this time around.
Well, I mean, we had over 900 yard signs out. So I would be absolutely shocked if Mr. Wheeler had more than 250 yard signs out. I mean, we, through the entire process, I was having to order more and more signs. But again, I mean, this is something that's never been done in Frankfort's history. We have never had a three-term mayor in the history of Frankfurt. And so, yeah, I mean, this was a situation that I wasn't taking anything for granted. I had my mind made up that it was going to be an uphill climb. No one's ever done it before. Local politics can be very fickle. We have put some projects on the table that can be viewed as unusual for smaller communities. And the way I looked at it was that it was going to be a referendum just on the general philosophy we have for Frankfurt. And projects like Nickel Plate Flats and Prairie Creek Park and investing more in amenities in order to attract people to attract jobs. And obviously that referendum, I feel like, came out very positive for us.
So in terms of you being the first ever three-term mayor, what does that part mean to you? Have you had a chance to kind of wrap your head around that since primary night? Because you've talked a lot on this program and plenty of other places about wanting 8 years ago to just become the mayor of your hometown. Now you're about to be the longest serving mayor of your hometown. Is that a different sort of pressure, a different sort of responsibility?
Well, it's been the same responsibility from day one, but the thing that I'm proud of is when I came into office, I didn't want to be remembered as a novelty. You know, my story was a unique story. I was very young. I was still in college at the time. It was a novelty story, and it gained national attention, and I was elected. But I didn't want people to remember it for that. I wanted people to remember it because of what we got done and how we progressed Frankfurt, and it was about leaving Frankfurt better than we found it for future generations. And so the fact that we were able to get that much closer to a third term this past week, it helps solidify that, of leaving behind a legacy of projects and progress and not just rhetoric or not just an age to go along with what I was when I came into office, but actually making Frankfurt a better place. And yes, that also comes with it an additional responsibility load on my shoulders to keep moving, not to become complacent, not to say, oh, okay, we got a third term, let's coast. No, that's, you know, our pedal is to the floor. We know that right now we're fighting for survival, and that's the way we're going to approach it each and every single day. We got a long way to go.
You used the word referendum a minute ago, and anytime you've got the sort of discussion that surrounded your election, which is, do we want to tax and spend the way that the city has been in the last couple of years, you can see it as sort of a referendum, especially if it's a fiscally conservative community like yours has been. What do you make of the referendum idea with respect to economic development there on spending large amounts of money to not just get new investment, but to update what you already have? Do you believe that you have a mandate, if you will, to put the pedal to the metal in that respect?
I really do. And I think the vote showed that people believe in what we're doing. Now, you know, although we have these major projects going on, we are not spending recklessly. That was one thing that my opponent tried painting a picture of. But when you look at the numbers, when you look at our cash reserves, when you look at the city general fund balance, we are actually in a stronger position than we were 8 years ago. Now, the next goal, and one big thing on my mind, even going into this budget session, okay, we've got our amenities in place. They're being built. We're seeing investment in Frito-Lay, investment in Donaldson. Now we just need to focus on continuing to grow that assessed value, so that we drive tax rates down, so that we make Frankfurt as affordable as possible for people to live. And that's an ever-evolving issue, but we're finally at the point in time, I think, we can start expecting some of that investment so that we can drive down tax rates. And that's ultimately where we want to be, and that's going to be a huge focus moving forward now that we have our house in order, so to speak.
You told me on election night that you wanted to, in your words, put your arms around Mr. Wheeler and his voters and talk more about the concerns that all of them had expressed about the city's spending. I wonder, have you had a chance to meet with him at all yet?
So I got to see Mr. Wheeler at the council meeting two nights ago, and I verbalized to him that I would love to sit down with him here once the dust settles, when he's comfortable, and have a one-on-one meeting in my office and hear him out. And if he has some ideas or some things that he would like to implement, I want to do that. I want to do that because there are a lot of good, worthy ideas that came from that side. And we're all one community. And And he said it himself the night of the debate. You know, now that this is over, it's time to unite. It's time to come together. But, you know, with the election night numbers that we saw, it's not the majority of Frankfurt. It is the minority. But yes, those people matter. I want to listen to them. And even Lewis, I'd love to partner with him the rest of this year and his time on the council and get some great things done that he believes should be done.
One of the things we've noticed here in the newsroom about Frankfurt is the prevalence of messages that spread on social media there. There's a very active group of Facebook and Twitter users. You took some issue with that during the campaign, and you mentioned it during the debate. At one point you said, all right, we're not on Facebook here, so let's get back to reality, in your words. We saw this not just during the campaign, but we also saw it during the talk about the Humane Society's finances last year. And the constant throughout all of it, from what we can tell, is that there seems to be some pent-up emotion in Frankfurt, that people want to see things done differently in some areas, especially where spending money is concerned. I wonder, can you use that emotion to the city's advantage in the next 4 years? Do you feel that you have to turn the tide a little bit away from what seems to be anger, to be perfectly frank about it, in a lot of respects? And can you use that, you know, the whole the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference thing to your advantage? Can you take some of that raw emotion and channel it?
I think a lot of it's anger because there's misinformation being shared. And if some of the things that I read on Facebook, if they were indeed true, I'd be angry as well. But the problem with social media is anyone can get behind a keyboard and type out numbers or type out, you know, what they believe is a fact, and it adds credibility. That platform gives them credibility. Then it gets 50 or 60 shares, and all of a sudden, misinformation becomes fact. And it's incredibly hard to stay in front of that. I referenced it the night of the debate. Mr. Wheeler had a sheet of paper that showed the TPA pool costing $12.9 million, the police station costing over $10 million, the ConAgra bond of $26 million, it's not even a bond at all. It's nothing that the city is on the hook for. It's an economic development incentive, and if ConAgra doesn't pay their taxes, they don't get a penny of that. But this kind of information was being shared at a rampant pace, and people were taking that as the gospel. And so what I wish would happen is if people had questions, we wouldn't rely so much on social media, but have face-to-face conversations, you know, come out to a mayor's night out event, come to our city council meetings. We give everyone an opportunity to publicly speak during those city council meetings. So for me, as much as anything moving forward, it's educating people and getting the facts out there. But unfortunately, through this campaign, we were battling a lot of misinformation being shared on social media, and that was very unfortunate.
So this gets back a little bit to the issue of transparency, which was also something that was brought up during the campaign. You have said you think the city is fairly transparent, but you've also taken some issue with what you've called the old boys network of decision making and leadership in the city, which would seem to indicate that you think even that more can be done to make yours a government of the people, by the people. How, in a third term, do you think you can make the city and its finances and its processes more transparent and maybe even more understandable so that you don't get things that you believe aren't true shared on social media?
Well, I think, unfortunately, in the society we live in, there's always going to be people out there that want to undercut you for one reason or another. I hate it that it has to be that way. So it's going to be a continuing fight. But I'm going to continue to do what I do in terms of educating people, having chats. Of course, if anyone has any questions, they can call my office. They can come to a city council meeting. You know, we do hold all-day budget workshops that are completely open to the public so that they can come and listen to what's happening in each individual department. We might even look at flexing those times to make it more accommodating to people who want to come in and listen to that. I think we can also utilize our website and start posting. I've talked to you about this before. I operate this city based upon a capital improvement plan that plans 5 years out at a time to make sure that we are spending responsibly, growing cash reserves, and really spending strategically so that we're attracting more private investment. And in terms of transparency for those who can't make the city council meetings, I know we've had a little problem with bandwidth on our website. We have corrected that. but having the audio of our city meetings on our website for people to go and listen to, I think can help as well. So we've taken steps, and we will continue to take even more steps to be as transparent as possible.
There was some talk during the debate about the amount of time it has taken to get some of that audio posted. Is that a transparency measure that you think is going to take some precedence of trying to get that up within maybe even a couple of days of the meeting so that people can have that available to them as soon as possible if they couldn't be there in person?
Yeah, and to put it in context, when I came into office, we didn't even have a functional website. We had no sound equipment in our city council chamber hall, so we had really no mechanical way to record city council meetings. So we've put all that into place, and now we have a system we can do that. And what we did was, for about 10 extra dollars a month, we were able to buy a little more bandwidth in terms of megabytes so that we can upload our audio faster. And it will start going up faster. I'd like to see it up within a week of the meeting at the max, so people can listen in on that and catch up with what happened at that city council meeting or that Board of Works meeting.
With respect to the grapevine, if you will, of people talking about things on social media, do you envision in the next 4 years having to put in some extra effort yourself to try to quell the grapevine a little bit, to try to go directly to some of the people you feel maybe are not sharing things that are true and engaging them directly and going, here's my view of things?
Yes, and I always try to do that, and I'll continue to try to do that. You know, if you look at Frankfurt's Instagram page now, we have an active Twitter account. You know, we have a very active Facebook page, and then I have my Mayor Chris McBond's Facebook page. I'm always feeding those monsters to get the correct information out there. And then I think it's incumbent upon all citizens in Frankfurt, if they read something or see something that they're angered about, you know, just pick up the phone and give us a call. If you see me out at the grocery store, ask me about it. That's okay. That's my job. But social media has completely changed the platform of discourse in our nation. And I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. I think more often than not, people believe what they read. They take it as the gospel. And we have forgotten how to have good face-to-face conversations with people, when in reality, citizens can come to our meetings. They can speak up. We are very accessible. And that's what we want to be for them.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfurt Mayor Chris McBarnes. You can call in your questions at area code 765-496-1999. Email questions to ask@wbaa.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. I mentioned the Humane Society and its finances a couple of minutes ago. You said at the beginning of this year you thought there might be a State Board of Accounts audit that would look deeper into that organization's finances than the county commissioners seemed willing to. I wonder, have you heard any more about that?
I have not, no. The state did inform me that they would be conducting that, and then they would be getting back with the correct parties. That is the last I've heard. Of course, we've been working with Jet Services since the first of this year in our trap meter and release program, so that's been going well. I got to tell you, I'm a little concerned on animal control. I want to continue to work with the county. I think our county commissioners are doing a fine job. I just want to make sure that animal control is being overseen properly here in the community. Obviously, Frankfurt, we impact animal control in a big way because most of the pets in the county are right here in Frankfurt. And that's something I want to reach out to the commissioners on. And if there's a bigger way that we can partner with them to make animal control more effective, I'm very open to looking at that.
Why do you say you're a little worried about animal control?
Well, I don't know. I don't know who's overseeing that right now. I don't know if the Humane Society has a new director. We haven't been shared with that information. So when Jim Tate was at the Humane Society, I knew my go-to. We had a point person there. And I just simply do not know who that is at this point in time. So that's why I bring it up.
Okay. A question that seems to come up kind of every spring and summer here on Ask the Mayor in one city or another is people call us and ask, well, what can the mayor do about the grass getting too high in my neighbor's yard? And so most cities have programs where municipal workers will cut the grass if it gets too high and then charge the homeowner if it goes for too long. Your city, interestingly, is shortening the window between the notification and the cutting. Is that right?
Yes, we are. We cut it from 10 days to 5 days.
And why that decision?
simply because it allows us to get on top of eyesores easier. So the individual, when they're in violation, I believe it's 7 inches or taller, they receive a posted certified letter. Once that letter has been delivered, we will check back 5 days later. If the grass is not cut, we will send in a crew. We're doing that through our street department now to save money as opposed to hiring a contractor. We just found at that 10-day mark in the spring, with the sun and the rain that we get, yards get absolutely out of control. Neighbors get very frustrated, and rightfully so. So it's really a code enforcement issue, and it's one way that we can fight blight in our community. I look at this the same way I look at junk and debris in alleys or old couches on front porch. This type of progress in the community, I think, is just as important as Frito-Lay investing. We need to keep our community clean. We need to keep yards in tidy order, and we felt as though moving from 10 days to 5 days is going to allow us to help the city's image.
I got to ask a procedural question. How do you know if grass is 7 inches tall? Do you have tape measures or rulers with the code enforcement people?
Yep, they do. They measure that, and if it's above the mark per ordinance, then the letter is sent. But yes, it is measured.
How often do you have to have people go and cut a lawn? How often each spring and summer is that an action the city has to take?
Sure. So, I mean, I think last year we probably cut anywhere between 50 and 100 yards. I'd have to guess. It'll be interesting to see what we get this year with all the rain. But, I mean, it happens very frequently, unfortunately. And this is also another thing that we've moved over to the police department for better efficiency. Our code enforcement department is being ran out of the police department. And it's going to work much better because our police officers are out on the streets every day. Our code enforcement, including our grass people, all report to Captain Jim Skinner. And so if police officers are noticing certain yards in a certain area of the city that are overgrown, they'll be able to work hand-in-hand with code enforcement to get those taken care of. And then as opposed to hiring an outside contractor to mow these yards once they are in violation, we are working through our street department, and our street superintendent will send out a mowing crew to actually take care of that. So we're going to save a considerable amount of money, and then any fines that are paid obviously go back into city general, which isn't a great amount of money by any means, but it's something to go back in the coffers to then hopefully help offset in the future wear and tear on lawnmowers, buying new equipment for the street department as they need it so that they can take care of this for us.
Any sense of how much you've collected in fines from that in recent years?
I'd have to look, Stan. I do not know off the top of my head on that.
Okay. On to one or two other things in our last 5 minutes or so here. There's also set to be a groundbreaking tomorrow on an addition at the IU Health campus there. The press release had an interesting phrase in it that I wanted to ask you about, since you're somebody who's interested in kind of health management. It calls it a 12-bed patient-focused facility. I guess I'd assumed that hospitals were always patient-focused. What does that phrase mean?
I like it. I think it's speaking comprehensively to all aspects of patient care, you know, whether that be mental well-being, physical well-being. And this is going to be a great community space. We're going to almost have a parkway as you come in through the south side of the city up Jackson Street. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be green. There's going to be a walking trail around the facility. 12 beds for a rural community, I think that's just fine. And, you know, in today's day and age of healthcare, you're in and out the door just because of modern medicine and how much it has progressed. This is really a big deal. I mean, who would have thought 8 years ago that Frankfurt would be getting a brand new $30 million hospital? And that's what they're breaking ground on tomorrow. So now, not only will we have IU Health, but we have the presence of Witham and St. Vincent's in Frankfurt. So we have three major medical suppliers for patient care here, which is big for economic development and quality of place. And then starting this July, the city of Frankfurt, we're partnering with IU to open up an employee healthcare clinic. So our employees that work for the utilities in the city will be able to go to this clinic in our industrial park beside Jimmy John's on 28 and free of charge, get wellness visits, physicals, get their immunizations done, get their kids checked out, just any primary care needs that they might have, blood draw. And we hope that this will help with the wellness of our overall group. People know that they have a good, accessible way to reach a provider and eventually drive down our healthcare costs.
I've talked to a couple of cities that have done exactly what you're talking about. Do you have a sense of how much money you're hoping to save? And I gather also that it's not just the direct cost right at the front, but hoping to save long-term cost of keeping people healthier so that you don't have to pay out the huge amounts of money that sometimes can really strap a city's budget for healthcare costs.
Absolutely, Stan. And see, that's the other thing. I mean, our city general budget, 80% of it is just salaries and health insurance. So if we can get the group of our health better, that means more freed up money in our budget to pave more roads or build more sidewalks or invest back into public safety. But two of the big areas that we are really going to tackle, folks that are diabetic, pre-diabetic, and then cholesterol. If we can get those people into an accessible situation and help stay on top of some of those chronic diseases that down the road lead to bigger issues and big high-dollar costs when it comes to surgeries or medications, it's going to save the taxpayers money, but at the same time, I hope it raises morale of employees. It shows them that we care about them. We're giving them an extra resource that they can use to keep they and their families healthy. We'll also have a wellness coach there along with a nurse practitioner. So if someone wants to go in and talk about an exercise plan, a diet, an eating regimen, whatever it might be, they'll be able to interface with this wellness coach at no charge to them.
One last thing I want to ask you about in our last 90 seconds or so here. There's been this, the teachers around here have been talking about this new teacher license workforce requirement. Basically, teachers now have to get some number of hours of training that is directed at trying to teach them about how they can work better with the workforce in their community, how they can teach kids to go out and search for the jobs that exist. It occurs to me in a city like yours that is so focused on trying to bring in economic development wherever you can, this might be something that teachers are talking about. Is it something you're hearing about?
I have not heard about it yet. You're the first one to kind of educate me on that. But I think it's great. And, you know, I think a lot of it goes back to our guidance counselors as well, being able to work with kids early on to see what their particular skill set is and then staying in tune with our industrial park. I mean, Stan, right now, Frito-Lay's hiring on mechanics at $33, $35 an hour. I mean, these trade skills, there's a lot of need for them, and we have a huge skills gap to fill in our industrial park. And if we can get our guidance counselors, and I know they're already doing it, but even keeping them more in tune with the needs of the local workforce, that's going to bode very well for me when I'm trying to attract the next big investment or the next big expansion to show these plant managers and these CEOs that, hey, we'll be able to fill that skills gap and get you the people you need to make your widget.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We'll let you get to the grand or the ribbon cutting anyway of the aviary there, and we'll catch you again next month.
Stan, thanks for the opportunity. Bye-bye.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to join us at this time next week for our conversation with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. In advance of that show, you can email questions to ask@wbaa.org. And remember, you can always find these shows archived on the Ask the Mayor page at our website. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.